All right. Good afternoon, everybody. If it's 1 o'clock on Tuesday, it must be Tuesdays with Dave. But as you know, Tuesday was delayed to Thursday, so it's Thursday. Thursday with Dave today. So if you are new to the Mastery Program, welcome. Welcome aboard. First of all, I want to say that you're in the right place. Simply follow what your coach says. Go into the resource center and follow those 26 competencies. And you can't help but be successful because it's proven over the last 14 years and many, many, many students before you. So welcome aboard. For those of you that are in Silver Success or in other programs that are also on this call as well, I want to welcome you to the call also. This is a call that will last approximately about an hour, and it's open line Q&A. To get your questions answered, you can ask any questions that you like. Not only I have a lot of real estate experience, but I also have a lot of life experience as well. So to get simply start zero, and the operator will come on the line, and he will put you in queue, and she'll bring you onto the call. And I know Alex is listening, and I'm a thunderstorm here. It's like somebody has a bad connection and it just went away. Good. All right. So first thing I want to do is I want to give a high five to Jeremy, Jody, and Frank Kurtz of Thurman, Maryland. They got 79 units in Atlanta, Georgia in February of 2017. The purchase price was $3,002,000. I wonder how they negotiated that extra $2,000. They got it down from $3.3 million. It was their first deal. They raised $1.15 million. The value plays is that they raised the rents, and they were able to add a RUB system in, a resident utility billing system. And because of that, they were able to hit their three-year projection in year one. They are also partnered in another 469 units in Atlanta with other Mastery students. That's always good when Mastery students get together and partner. And they are grateful to have met the Ivory Mentor team. So excellent for you three. High five. One, two, three. High five for all three of you for taking action and executing. Also, reminder that Ultimate Partnering 9 is happening in about 2 weeks' time. July 28th to the 30th, it's the place to be. It's right here in Boston, in our own backyard. If you're not signed up, you want to get signed up. The last early bird bonus went by the wayside. But if you listen to this, you can go to davetribute.com, put in the promo code DEAL. You'll get that last early bird. You'll also see an interview that I had with really good as well. So, that being said, I can see Alex, and Alex, a lot, like someone's got a bad mic. Oh, Alex, fix my mic.
Hello, hello. Is that something with the call itself, not an option? So it's not that, it's the call.
All right, who's my operator today?
Hi, this is Lilium. Are you ready for our first question?
Yeah, but you know, I'm going to say a couple of questions that people had sent in, but now that you just jumped on, the fuzzy sound went away. So I think there may be something with the fuzzy sound.
Okay. Just let me know if you're having some issues or if you hear it again, because I don't hear anything. I did hear your mic was going kind of in and out, and you were cutting up, but you sound clearer, better now.
Okay. All right. So I'm going to answer some questions, and then I'll be ready for some questions. All right. First one is from Rhea Tobin from La Jolla, California. She asked, is there an itinerary for UP9? Yes, there is. And it's actually not on the website yet, but we will post one over there, and you'll get one at the door when you walk through as well. Boris Jink from Santa Rosa, California, who's been doing a lot of deals out there, and will be at UP9, said, I had a thought about our previous Shark Tank experience at UP7. We presented 2 years ago for the Shark Tank. We ended up getting funding and closing the deal. We presented just under $12 million in January of 2016. We did a fair amount of work on the place and just got it appraised for a HUD refinance for $20 million. Not a bad 18 months worth of work. I don't know how the Shark Tank presenters projects turned out, but if you guys want to show a success story, I'm sure I can get Chris to be the guinea pig at UP9. All right, thanks, of course. I appreciate that. So thank you very much. The next question, I'll just go more in operator. That's my ear. Next question. If I can raise money from a foreign country, do foreign investors need to pay income tax on the returns that they received? That is from Jing He from San Marcos, California. Yes, actually, there's a procedure that any foreign investors need to follow. There's actually a couple of different procedures that they would need to follow. I see you're a Mastery student. If you go to the Mastery website under private funding or private money, there were two different calls with two different attorneys that talk about how to get foreign money into the United States, the legal way. And it has to do with offshore corporations, setting up an offshore corporation, and they funnel it through the corporation and they get into the U.S. That's usually the easiest way. There's another way that they're doing it now, and that's through Bitcoins. So I know a friend of mine actually in Boston, another Harvard alumni, was telling me he's from China, and they're trying to get their money out of China and into U.S. real estate. And they're doing it by buying Bitcoins and then cashing in the Bitcoins in the U.S. That's very interesting. So let me start by opening up the questions. If you've been to any of the Ultimate Partnering events, let me know as you ask your question. So who is the first caller?
Okay, our first question comes from Paul. Paul, please go ahead.
Okay, you can hear me okay?
Yeah.
Can you hear me?
What's up?
This is Paul.
Yeah.
And I did an LOI the other day, and they emailed me back and said they're interested, and I'm now searching for a sponsor, and I'm wondering what lies ahead here. This is my first transaction. What lies ahead here that I need to be aware of that I'm maybe not aware of?
Oh, man. You went to boot camp, right?
Yeah, I went to boot camp. Yep. And I'm in Mastery.
I'm
a coaching client.
All right. There's so much ahead of you. Go ahead.
It seems like it all comes at a rush, and that is. So when do I get the SEC attorney? Does your organization have a form that I should use that I can fill out with the sponsor to set up an arrangement, an agreement with them?
You would do that through an attorney. So you'd have an agreement with any partners, and you'd probably do it through your SEC attorney. Yeah, you would do it through the SEC attorney. So first of all, you could contact an SEC attorney anytime and get them on your team. And then when you get a deal, then you put them into action. And it doesn't cost you anything to get them on your team. They may require a retainer when you put them into action. So everything really goes into motion when that deal gets signed. So if they're interested, when your LOI gets signed, did you get sponsorship as a bonus, or are you looking for a sponsor?
Well, I sponsorship was part of my sign-up.
I asked you two questions.
Yeah.
All right.
So when I joined coaching,
So what you would do is once you have the letter of intent signed, or if you're going into best and final, you would submit that deal over to Genie, and Genie would match you up with the sponsor that would do that type of deal, whatever type of deal you've got. So that's how that would go. You've got to, once you get the LOI signed, then you would engage your attorney to start the paperwork to get it started. But then, you're going to do your financial due diligence, and then you're going to do your physical due diligence. The attorney's going to do the legal due diligence, and the process moves forward from there. Review those 26 core competencies, and that will take you step by step through how the transaction is going to play out.
Okay.
You know, okay, go back to the boot camp and go back to the boot camp manual and open it up and look at the very first thing we do at boot camp is talk about the steps of doing the deal. That's
okay.
Right there. That will be for roadmap.
Okay, thank you.
All right, excellent. You're welcome. All right, who's next?
Okay, we have no further questions.
On this beautiful summer day up here in Boston.
No further questions at the moment. Just I wanted to remind everybody on the line, if you have a question and would like to ask a question, please press star zero. Star zero for questions, please. Thank you.
Simply press star zero. Summertime is a little bit slower on questions than normal. That's why I've got a lot of them that were emailed in because there's a lot of people on vacation. So let's see. Paul Russo writes in, I'm at a point where I'm building my own credibility kit for my company. I was hoping you can give me some information on what to put down since I really don't have a ton of credibility. Well, you put down your education. You put down the things that you've done well in life, any awards that you've gotten. Have you raised a family? Are you in the process of raising a family? All the different things that you've been successful at. And part of your credibility kit is the types of deals that you do, where you do them, why you do those types of deals, and you put all those things together in a package. And that's basically it. It's all the successes. If you don't have a lot of real estate successes, you talk about your education and the other successes that you've had in life. You put in testimonials from people that say good things about you, people in the community, clergy, politicians. Put it all together. Let me see. Fabian Cardenas from Chicago, Illinois writes in. He says, I've got a question regarding syndications. I recently met with an old associate. We discussed the multifamily business, and he mentioned that he had a few investors that had $2 to $3 million to invest. Nice. He doesn't have any of his own money, but I was interested in getting involved. I would like to engage those investors and see if they can work with us. I'm also not opposed to compensating this associate if he can bring value. Do you have any suggestions for working with other partners, types of structure, compensation? Would you recommend that we not get involved with him? Well, you know, what you would do, compensation, you can't give fees out for people that raise money, but you can give them equity, make them part of the deal, make them a partner in the deal, an equity partner in the deal. And that's typically how it's done. So a lot of times what you'll do is you'll take 25% of the company dollar being let's say it's a 60-40 split, investors getting 60% of the returns and you getting 40% of the returns, you the sponsor. So of this 40%, you would carve out 25% of that money for the people that raised the money, for the people that brought in the money. And they would get a certain percentage of the equity of the deal. So let's say it's a $1 million raise. And of that 20%, okay, somebody brings in $500,000. So they would get 50% of that 25%. 50% of that 25%. And then whoever brought the rest, it would be doled out accordingly. So that's usually how it's done. So should you not get involved with that person? No, I would get involved with them. If it's a way to certainly raise money, you know, you already have a pre-existing relationship. You'll need to create a pre-existing relationship with the other people involved as well before you make an offer. And then you would move forward from there. Jason Fiedler from Tampa, Florida writes, and he says, being that we're looking to build relationships with brokers that we're dealing with and eventually earning their trust so we can get the property, the pocket listing, is there a general rule of thumb on how low an offer price is too low to submit to the broker? You don't want to get him or her upset. No, there's not. If you follow the low ball offer script in your bootcamp manual, which basically goes something like, and this is typically somebody that you would meet on BootNet or on the internet, or just somebody that emails you a property tax, which is really, really, you know, overpriced. So you would say, after you do the analysis, call the broker, say, Mr. Broker, I did the analysis of your property. And when I do my analysis, I'm a conservative investor, and my number came out really low. And the last thing I want to do is give you a low ball offer at the start of our relationship. So I'm not sure if I should just put this one aside and wait for your next good deal, or should I present you with the offer? So in that statement right there, you did a lot of different things. First of all, you acknowledge the fact that you're a conservative investor, or you're a real investor, and that you've done your numbers, and based on what you need to get as a return, your offer is going to be low. So now you just future-paced them and said, you know, I'm not sure if I could, at the start of our relationship, now you're telling them that our relationship has started. So at the start of our relationship, I'm not sure if I should present you with this low offer. Don't call it a low ball offer, just call it a low offer. I should present you with a low offer, or should I wait for your next good deal? So now you're future-pacing them, saying, should I wait for your next good deal? You're going to give it to me. And then from there, you just move forward. You get a lot of different answers from there, but I can tell you one thing. You'll get a lot of experience, and you'll get a lot of confidence from answering the questions that the broker will have after that. Because if you've been trading properly, you'll be able to answer just about all of the questions. Every once in a while, there's a strange question that's thrown at you. Sometimes people will ask me, you know, broker asked me this question. What do they mean? I'll have no idea because I'd never heard it before. So it's very rare, but it does happen. So, yeah, you're going to get these odd questions. But all in all, if you're trained properly, you'll know what to say. You'll come across as professional. And the broker will want to do business with you because professionals, people that come across as professionals, close deals. And the way you just entered into the relationship by using that script, you come across as very professional as well. So that's the answer there. So, operator, who do we have on the Wisecracker line today? Who's next?
Okay, up next we have Jose. Jose, please go ahead.
Hi, Dave. Good afternoon. How are you?
Hey, Jose, what's going on?
Good. Yeah, right here from San Antonio, Texas, and looking forward to the UP9 and seeing you there.
Yeah, it's going to be a good time. You coming in early?
Yes,
you leaving late? You going to see Boston a little bit?
No. I'll probably just go around pretty quick. I wish I could, but no, not this time.
Well, get plenty of sleep. It's going to be long nights as you're networking through the night. I've known people who go the whole 3 days with no sleep.
That would be nice to do. That would definitely be nice. So
I haven't done that since I was Flesh from Flesh Picnic in my rock and roll days.
Okay, that's good. So Dave, going back to the question, there's a property I'm looking at, actually two different properties, but they seem to show the same behavior. If I run the numbers on the property as they sit right now, I'm like somewhere between 55% of the asking price, which of course it's not even close to the Holy Trinity, but I can see that there's a lot of value add because both of them are being owner managed and they have very high prices or expenses on different areas, insurance, repair and maintenance, admin. They are very inflated.
Yes.
Probably because they are part of being not owner managed correctly. How can I take advantage of that and be able to make a competitive offer? Like, for example, I've tried running interest only in my analysis, but since I still have to run on actuals, what's the best recommendation there?
Did you say at the beginning of the call that you're running at about 55% of the offer price?
Yes.
For the amount that you can pay?
Yeah.
You're pretty far off there.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing that some people do that I don't recommend is they try to go in the first year with almost no cash flow, no equity, and then make it all up on the value play in year two or three. But that's only for people that have been doing deals for a long period of time that know what they're doing. It's not for people that are, you know, just starting out and, you know, you really don't know what you don't know, even if you're in mastery.
Correct.
And you've got those 700 hours behind you and you've watched it all. Everything's so different when you go out there and start working it. You get surprised at a lot of different things. So in this particular case, really the only thing you can do is make your offer to the broker and you know, try to start a relationship that will bring you a deal that's closer to, you know, something that you can actually close on.
Okay. Because it seems to be quite common. I usually get, my numbers are usually around 50 to 60%. Everything I get is usually around that.
Yeah.
And even though I have, you know, I would call it a decent number of
of brokers involved and have a network with, but still my numbers come extremely low. So I was just wondering if it's something that I'm doing or just not getting really good deals, off market deals, or if it's just my underwriting that my needs to polish.
I can tell you what's wrong. What is wrong is that your relationships aren't strong enough yet to get you those deals that are within the range that you need in order to get an offer accepted, or at least into the negotiation stage. So you're still getting the deals that everybody else is seeing after nobody wants to buy them. You know what I mean? So it's just a matter of working on your relationships, finding the commonality. I mean, you don't have to give me the name, but like, think about your best broker, the person that you think you have the best relationship with, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And then when was the last time you talked to that person?
Oh, like
the last time
yesterday.
You talked to that person.
Yeah.
And what did you talk about?
Properties that we're looking at and, talking about kind of life in general sometimes. Like, we talked every 2 weeks or so at least. Just checking how we're doing.
What do you have in common with that broker? Other than real estate?
Not going there yet. Yeah, I'm not there yet.
You haven't gotten there yet?
No.
That's what you got to do. You got to find commonality. You got to talk about the things that you have in common other than real estate. Your conversation should start with those things, and then business is done after. So you got to create that relationship. That's what's not happening. The other thing too is find out how many listings this broker had last year. You know, and how many listings they typically get. Because if this broker is only doing 2 or 3 listings a year, then you really only have 2 or 3 shots at getting a deal. You know what I mean? From a particular broker. Which is not bad. I mean, you can still continue the relationship, but you want somebody that would be more active. So building relationships is good, but building relationships with the right brokers is better.
Okay. All right. Understood. Thank you. Appreciate your feedback.
All right. Thank you. Talk to you soon. Hey, anybody wondering what this is? If you're watching live, we're doing a live stream right now. Just realized that's right on the corner of my desk and you can see it. This is a Ganesh. This is the Hindu god called Ganesh. And what it is a prevents obstacles, and it's the god of wisdom learned. So, you know, we do theme things here at the office. And right now we're going through a growth period, and that is our mascot. Not saying that we worship any false gods. I had Alice downstairs, who our secretary. If you know Alice, you know she's very outspoken. She said she was not going to put that on her desk because we had them downstairs and she stuck in because she was a Christian woman and she wasn't going to put a false god on her desk. And I said, Alice, we're not looking at it as a god. We're just looking at it as a symbol of something that prevents obstacles or makes obstacles dissipate and is the god of wisdom and learning, which is. In order to grow, you need to learn, and you need wisdom. So our last time we were in a growth period, we had Lawrence of Arabia as our mascot. And that's a long story, but if you read the story of Lawrence of Arabia, you'll figure out why he was our mascot. So who's next? Who's next on this beautiful Thursday afternoon in Boston?
Okay, up next we have Chip. Chip, please go ahead.
Good afternoon, Dave. This is Chip from Los Angeles.
Hey, Chip, what's your favorite snack?
Potato. No, I'd say chocolate. Yes, probably, yeah.
Dark chocolate?
Sometimes buffalo chocolate. If I've really had a lot to drink.
Buffalo.
And on rare occasion, poker chips. So, Dave, I have. I was looking at a. I'm sorry?
Must be hard on the teeth.
Well, I get chipped teeth that way. Okay. So,
what's on your mind?
This is killing me. Okay. So, I have a. Looking at a 58 unit property in Tulsa. And the value play is in rehabbing the interiors. The exterior has been done over recent years, but the interiors could be updated and then rents raised, and that would be the value play. Now, when I got the T12, which actually was a T13, And so I managed to chop off one of the months. But the T12 listed a certain amount of income, about 16 or 17% of the income, as affordable housing income. So I'm going to assume that would be like Section 8. So is that a barrier to a plan of rehabbing the interiors of the units and raising rents?
First of all, you can't assume what it is because you need to know. Because if it's Section 8, that's not so bad because you can always, at the end of the term, evict a Section 8 tenant if you don't want to have Section 8 anymore. But it could be something like down in that area, or in Texas anyways, they have this low-income program called LORA. And LORA means that you have to have a certain amount of people at a certain income range, and you can't charge them over a certain rent. So you would need to know what those parameters are. So the next step is to find out what the parameters are of that low-income rent and what the requirements are, if you're required to actually keep it for a certain period of time or, you know, for the life of – it's usually for like a 15-year period. And some of it's probably burned off by them. But if it's Section 8, won't be a problem.
Okay. Is that so I would go to the owner or the listing broker to find out what kind of subsidy it is. And then from there, how do I find out the information that you just mentioned? Do I go to the local government?
You either want to see the lease contract or the because these programs have their own leases. You want to see the lease contract, and if they're under a particular program, then you want to see the program parameters. You want to see all the program paperwork. And then you want to give it to an attorney to read it to make sure you know what all the little innuendos are in there, what you can and can't do and for how long.
Okay, good. One other question to follow up, if I may. So on a plan where I go into a building and I want to update every single unit, let's say the whole thing, it's livable, but, you know, it's all 60s or 70s stuff and it's time for updating and raising the rent. How does that actually play out? Do you actually start kicking tenants out in order to get into the units and update them?
Yeah, you just don't. You start raising rents when rents become due. You let them know like 90 days out that you're going to be raising rents, and then you offer them an incentive to stay. And if they don't stay, you know that they're leaving, and then they move out, and then you renovate. It's really difficult to do a renovation. If it's all to like deferred maintenance on a property, on a unit, you can certainly get in there and do deferred maintenance while a tenant lives there.
No, this would be renovation.
A lot more work. Oh, yeah, then you're going to have to wait till the end of the lease. And you can either move them to another unit that's been renovated at the higher rent, or you're just going to let them know that you're not going to be renewing, which you may end up in. Sometimes you end up in housing court, you know, or eviction court to evict them out. And when you evict for possession, when they're paying their rent and you evict for possession, it takes a little bit longer. So, you know, there's can't really say how successful you'll be at evicting or how long it's going to take or how much it might cost, but those are all the different things you need to be thinking about.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I certainly don't want to breed bad blood and, you know, send kicking people out onto the streets. Obviously, I guess once you start renovating units, then you can offer them a unit that's finished.
Yeah. Yep. At the higher rent. And it all depends on how much higher the rent's going to go and where you're going to be at market. And are you going to turn that, like, is this a C property that you're going to turn into a B-?
Conceivably, yes. Yes, it's and this is the kind of properties that I tend to gravitate towards, are C properties and C neighborhoods. And maybe some of them have already gone through updating and the subject it hasn't. I kind of like that kind of property.
Yeah, see, well, you know, better to have a C property in a B neighborhood. But if it's a C property in a C neighborhood and the rents are low because of the fact that it needs to be renovated, you can certainly bring it up to market and make a bunch of money too. So, yeah, if that's your niche, sounds like a good niche.
Well, yeah, we'll see once
sounds
it
like,
plays
I'll tell you
out.
One thing. With that particular niche, you will not be losing tenants because of the fact that you're changing the tenant profile. The tenant profile will remain the same, that you're just moving up to you know, you're improving the property to market, you're bringing rents up to market. So therefore, if the tenant can afford it, they'll typically stay. And if they can't, they'll find another place that needs work and that has lower rent.
I
see. You'll have more. You'll have a higher retention than you would if you were bringing it up to a different class.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Hey, you're welcome. Good luck out there. All right, let's see. I got a question here. Stephanie Pimentel from Plantation, Florida writes in, question about non-circumvention. I have a person who worked in wealth management and asked me about using non-circumvention when she introduces family offices to investors or guys working on the projects. Do we use one regularly in this situation? Well, I'm not sure why, if she is a if she works in wealth management, if she would want you to sign a non-circumvent, because I don't know what benefit she would get for introducing you to family offices. Usually what happens in a family office, for those of you that don't know, are usually a wealthy family that provides funding for our real estate deals. So if there's something that they're getting in return, you know, like a real estate broker, if they don't have the listing on a property and it's not listed with anybody else, they'll ask you to sign a non-circumvent, so you won't go around them directly to the owner to get that property because they don't have it listed. So they're going to get compensated for the work that they've done. I'm just not sure how a person would get compensated here, but if there is compensation involved, and I wouldn't have a problem signing a non-circumvent with somebody that introduced me to something that I wanted or needed. So, and do we use them all the time? Yes, non-circumvents are pretty common in this business. All right, let's do one from Ricky Proctor. He says, short and sweet, got deals with no backing yet, cannot close, multiple opportunities. How can I overcome this hurdle? Well, I mean, if you got deals that actually work, send them into the office. We'll certainly, you have to submit the, how to submit a deal form. Everything has to be 100% complete in there or we won't look at it. But send them over to the office. I mean, we'll do them, or we'll send them out to somebody in your area, another student that we'll probably do them with you as well. So there's that. Nancy Chan writes in, but she's got a lot of questions, so I'm going to skip over Nancy and I'm going to go to Donnell Cooper. Donnell says, he says, I was on the call on Friday the 7th about multifamily investing and wanted to know how I go about getting the kit. Well, just call the office, 781-878-7114. 781-878-7114. All right, so I'm going to open it up for more questions. Who's next?
Okay, up next we have Mark. Mark, please go ahead.
Hey, Dave, it's Mark from Ottawa, Ontario. How are you doing?
Hey, Mark, how's it going? You coming down for UP9?
Definitely. I can't wait. Just realized today when
you said it's a good time. It'll be a lot of fun.
Are you serious when you said that you saw the people that were networking all night long and didn't sleep for that whole 3 days?
Oh, yeah. There's been reports of people,
really?
You know, they meet people that they click and they got deals and they spend their days being educated and networking with other people. And then at night they get together as a group and they run through deals. So, yeah, that's happened in more than several occasions.
Wow.
I'm not saying that it's going to happen to everybody, but I'm just saying it happens. You definitely want to get a lot of sleep because, you know, it is a networking event and, you know, you'll be going out to dinner with a group. You know, the bigger the group, the better when you go out to dinner. Because you'll meet more people, but there's always groups of people going out. And if you meet somebody that you think is going to be a business partner or a potential money partner and you want to take them out one-on-one, you want to do that as well. But usually people go out to dinner in groups, and then afterwards they'll click with people at dinner, and then they'll meet after that.
You know? So,
yeah, there are late nights there. I don't have late nights. I go home and go to bed.
I guess you can afford to do that. We're still when we're growing and trying to put stuff together. Still looking for that elusive first deal.
I'll tell you, the amount of work that it takes to run this event, we need our sleep. Everybody, me and the staff. It gets crazy.
I bet.
But anyways, what's on your mind today?
We're starting meetups here in Ottawa, and I'm trying to be real careful about not pitching at meetup events, obviously, because I don't know the people that are coming. I don't know their background. I don't know their financial history, all that kind of stuff. So I'm also thinking that we're going to do a luncheon. So I'm hoping to do enough meetups so that I can, you know, mention the luncheon enough to people that I can drive enough people from the meetup to the luncheon, as well as doing other stuff for the luncheon. So I'm trying to kind of balancing pitch versus not pitch. You know what I mean? You know, like I'm thinking meetup is more very educational, and the luncheon is more pitch. Does that make sense?
Yeah, definitely. But I would, you know, on the meetup though, I mean, you can do you can do something at the very beginning of the meetup where, you know, people get like a 30-second pitch or a 1-minute pitch, you know, and you can do your own, just letting people know that, you know, who you are, what to do, and what you're looking for.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
It sounds like I got like a storm brewing in my ear. I'm not sure
I hear that too, Dave. You've been kind of.
Do you hear that noise? Oh, you do?
All.
Oh, so.
Yeah.
So the other end hears it as well, operator.
Okay.
Were you saying something to me, operator?
No, I was just going to go ahead and see if I can take care of that email or tech. But for now, what I can do is just to test it, just is mute Mark really quick, just to see if that makes it better, because it could be when his line is open. When the other participants were asking questions, it sounded clear to me. I'm not sure if you were listening, you were hearing that too.
I was hearing that choppiness.
Yeah, I heard the. Did you hear the operator as well, Mark? Okay, so the operator was talking to me in what we call the green room, and if you heard me responding to her, you heard me, but you didn't hear her. So she's going to mute you for a couple seconds, Mark. She's going to see if that will actually end the noise, we've had callers on before that were clearer, so I don't know if that's the situation, but that's the first thing she's going to try. And then...
okay, Dave, I'm sorry to interrupt you. Do you still hear it?
Yeah.
Right now? Do you hear it? Like when I speak, do you hear it?
I don't hear it right now. No, I don't hear it when you're speaking to me.
Okay, Mark's muted, so it might be his line.
All right.
Mark, you're live
so
again.
Mark, back up and hey, Mark. So, what else? You have any follow-up questions? She thinks it might be your line.
Yeah, I don't.
But Garlis, you have any follow-up questions?
I was just going to. Follow up on that question that Jose was asking about that relationship, a strong relationship. I get a lot of stuff from Marcus and Millichap like services that you know, you fill out the, you know, the criteria that's sort of what you're looking for from a property, and I get those. Do you think, I mean, I get a fair amount of deal flow that way, but I guess I'm answering my own question. I guess it's not really strong relationship because those guys just put stuff up and the system decides if it fits your criteria to get it through. And it's, so have you ever done deals that way with those kind of types of services where I guess you're going to have to call the brokers when I want to build
what
up the
relationship? What type of service
is it? Sorry?
The best thing to do is build relationships. The best thing you can do is go. I'm not sure what type of service you're talking about. What type of service are you talking about?
Well, like Marcus and Millichap. Marcus and Millichap have their brokerage arm. You go onto their site, you can fill out saying, I'm looking for C-class properties at this range, this price, right? And so when one comes up,
it gets
automatically sent to you. So there's
no real
relationship with anybody there.
That doesn't work.
Hold with the computer. So I'm just wondering if that's even worthwhile kind of still pursuing those kind of things because you never really get a relationship with a broker.
Right. So all the deals that get sent out are deals that nobody wanted, basically. So you can put your name in there. I mean, Marcus Millichap, you put your name in so you can get their top 40 markets list and read through that and maybe get some good, leads on some good markets. But you know, you won't get a deal by putting your name and email address on any list. It's all about relationships. You gotta, I mean, you might get some one-off deals here and there, but you know, what you really want is you want a stream of pocket listings coming in on a regular basis from a broker or brokers that you have a good relationship with.
Okay, sounds good. Thanks, Dave.
All right. Hey, you know what? I just want to plug something. This is a book by Victor Bell. And Victor Bell is a student, been a student for many years. I met him back, I think, in 2006. He just sent me this. He was a coach for a long time. He's a deal maker. If you saw me early on, about 8 or 9 years ago, I used to use his testimonial about how he lives in Hawaii and he does deals on the mainland of the United States, but very rarely goes to his deals because he lives in Hawaii. Well, who wants to leave Hawaii? But he does it because he built a pretty big team. Victor's all about head and headspace and, you know, taming that monster that's in between your ears. So he sent me this book that he wrote, 30 Days of War, and it's basically a day-by-day thought process where you just take a day. It's about a page and a half read, and then he has follow-up questions that you answer each day. And it's called 30 Days of War. No excuses. Just do what you need to do to get ahead and forge forward. So I read the introduction. I read the first day, which is today. And, it appears to be very good. Victor always comes out with quality stuff. He's a good guy. All right. Who's next? I don't know if it's on Amazon or not. Might be. Well, who's next?
Okay. Next we have
ChampionArmy.com. Who's next?
It's Tracy. Tracy, please go ahead.
Hi, Dave. It's Tracy from Washington, D.C. How are you?
What's going on over there? Is it raining?
No, it's actually almost 100 degrees today.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's a hot one today. Dave,
What are you doing to keep cool?
You know what? I'm headed to the pool, to be honest with you.
Nice.
All
right, what's on your mind?
I came across an off-market 1,300-door B-class deal. And it's clearly above my realm. And I was just wondering, is that something I should still pursue? Because I would need a lot of help, and I really don't know where I'm going to go to get help.
Then don't pursue it. Stick with, you work your way up to that level. Do a deal that you're comfortable with, that you're comfortable knowing that you can execute. You'll do that. You'll feel comfortable after you get it done. You'll feel this great sense of accomplishment, and you'll have all kinds of confidence to do the next higher deal. There's like 4 or 5 different levels of deal making that each time you take that next step, you get really nervous. Like for me, I would only do 3 to 6 unit deals for almost 3 years before I bought a 40 unit. And then I was really nervous when I bought the 40 and the 80 unit. And then I did that. And my next, I actually went into a partnership on a 300 unit, which I was really nervous about. So then I did that. And then we ended up doing 3 deals in the same month. And I was really nervous about that. And then I ended up doing a 400-unit rehab at 26% occupancy. I was really nervous about that, and I never should have done that deal. You're going to be nervous a lot of different times. And the one that I shouldn't have done is I wasn't prepared for. I had never done a rehab that big before, I didn't know what I didn't know, and that took me a lot of years. Come on over here. Gene Olofsky has an important message to be sending. What is it?
Yeah, I have four questions.
Over there. Over there. Okay.
I love
what you've done for you. As people listening, they're sending in questions?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Good. So don't do it. If you're not comfortable, it's not so much if you're not comfortable, because you should certainly press your comfort zone and be uncomfortable. But if you don't think you have the resources to get the deal done or the understanding of the deal to do it, don't do it. Do a smaller deal and work your way up. Get some experience.
Well, I've been looking at deals for, I went to UP8, and I've been looking at a lot of deals.
How was UP8?
It was, phenomenal.
Pretty awesome, wasn't it?
Yes. I never expected it.
Tell everybody why it's so good and why they tell everybody why these Ultimate Partnering events are so good and why they should go.
It's so good because you know, with the speed networking, I met so many people, and then just sitting next to random people, you start talking. I met a lot of people. I've kept in contact with, you know, some of them. You gave a shout out earlier. I had kept in contact with the Thurmont, Maryland crew. I knew that they were pursuing that one. They wanted me to possibly go in and help do the raise if I wanted to. You just meet a lot of people.
It's a great environment to be in.
Yes. A great environment.
And everybody's there for the same purpose, and everybody knows it's a networking event, and everybody is open to talking to other people.
Yeah.
Inviting them. And
yeah.
Even if you're not invited, just say, hey, can I join? And they're like, yep, come on.
Yep.
So
it was. It was a great event.
Thanks for that. Appreciate it. And by the way, let me just plug it one more time. If you're listening and not going, go to daveinterview.com. You'll see an interview that I'm doing that I did with Emmett Smith there. There's also a sign-up page for the registration. Put in the promo code DEAL, D-E-A-L, and you'll get the pricing from before the last early bird special. Thanks for letting me promo that. So what's on your mind? So what do you think about this deal that you really shouldn't be doing because it's too big for you?
Well,
or you're not ready for it?
I actually would like to do it because of the numbers. I mean, it's a Class B, and there's a lot of doors, but it's down in the low 30s per door. And
that's really low for me. Why?
Yeah, and it's a portfolio. So
yeah. How many different deals?
13.
How many different units did you say?
I think
13
it's
different
1,300
properties?
Units. It's 13 properties.
Oh. That's a big deal.
Well, that's why that's why I'm kind of bringing it to you. Is it maybe something I could Shark Tank? Is it something that, you know somebody that might want? It's in Florida, Georgia. Maybe you can refer me to someone
that could
go in on the deal.
I have a couple of equity partners. How much information do you have on the deal? The problem with the 1,300-unit deal is the fact that it's so much work analyzing that portfolio. I mean, it's hours
mm-hmm.
and hours and hours, and if the deal doesn't go through, you know, it's all that time that's gone by. And usually, you know, before we'll start looking at something like that, we will have the person do the analysis and give it to us, and if the analysis makes sense, we'll move forward. And if the analysis is just not done properly or so way off, then we don't spend any time with it. But I do happen to know a couple of different investment groups that are looking for portfolio sizes like that, especially if it's B, if they're all B. So why don't you send it over to Jeannie, and I'll scan it, and then I may be able to forward it. You know who might do it is Matt Romney, who's going to be at the event. Mitt Romney's son
okay.
is going to be speaking here. So he may be interested in something like that. I know they're doing deals in Florida. So, yeah, send it over. We'll take a look.
I'll see if I can get more information and try to analyze it more before I send it over.
All right.
Okay. Thank you, Dave. I look forward to seeing you in a couple weeks.
We'll see you at UP9. It's going to be great.
Yes. See you then. Yep. Looking forward to it.
Yep. All right. This is the first cucumber I got on my garden here. If you're watching the live stream, it's a pickle cucumber. I used to make pickles, but I took a whole bunch of it from last year. But yeah, you know, up here in the Northeast, things grow usually around in July. And the cucumbers just started growing, which is a good thing. You know, summertime just isn't complete unless you have a cucumber sandwich, cucumber with mayo, toasted, with white bread. All right, who's next? Who's next on the Wisecracker line? Let me see. Let me answer a couple more questions real quick. I just learned of triple net lease. This is from Dina Ree. Dina writes in, I just learned of a triple net lease investing. How does this strategy go? What are the steps? How do I need to move forward in a deal like this? Well, typically a triple net lease means that the tenant is going to take care of their own taxes, their own common area maintenance, their own insurance, and you don't. which is the least riskiest of all. Least is it's using a commercial property and it's using an A property, which means you're going to have your lowest yield. So triple net lease investing is good if you want low yields, but if you're value investors like we are that look to get, you know, the wealth is made in the value that you add to a property. So if you're value investors, we typically buy B and C type of properties, whether it be commercial or multifamily properties, add the value, force the appreciation, and make a ton of money. So the best time for people like us to triple net lease invest is during the downturn, because then those A properties, you can buy them for the same amount that you get the B's and the C's with the same amount of yield, which only happens in a downturn. So that's when you would that would be it. Mark Ryan from Mariah Holdings writes in and says, what should be my expected outcome from Ultimate Partnering 9? Well, it all depends on what you go in there for. You can go in there for the education. You can go in there for the exposure to Emmett Smith, Mitt Romney. You can go in there for networking. You will certainly meet a lot of people. It's almost like it's not forced networking, but it's a lot. We play a lot of games. We have a lot of fun. So you're definitely going to meet a lot of people. You should bring a lot of business cards, dress business casual. And you should, if you're going in looking for partners, you should definitely expect to meet partners, money partners, people of like mind, and then get a lot of great education. My opening presentation is going to be about the 8 disciplines that you need to have in your real estate business in order to scale it. So first time I've ever given the presentation, I'm halfway through it right now. So that should be a pretty good presentation. I'm really looking forward to that. And then there's going to be a lot of good stuff going on there. All right, who's next? Who's next on the Wisecracker line?
Okay, up next we have Shelby. Shelby, please go ahead.
Hey, Dave.
Hey, Shelby.
Hello.
What's going on?
Hey, how are you?
Yeah, good.
Can you hear me? Hello?
Yeah, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you fine.
I don't think you can hear me. Okay.
I can hear
What's
you.
What's up?
I can hear you. Okay. I sent you an email, so I wasn't sure if you were going to read it, but I have to head to a meeting, so it was just easy to call in.
Okay.
I have a 4-family property that was donated to my organization by a bank. My organization is a nonprofit that houses homeless veterans and formerly incarcerated people. The properties are complete gut rehab. When the renovations are complete, we're going to rent them to veterans. I've had at least 6 contractors give verbal quotes ranging from $175,000 to $500,000 to rehab them, and one offer to purchase it as is for $3,000, including all closing costs. Now, I really don't know how much it's going to cost to rehab them because no one will put it in writing, and I'm not familiar with that section of town. But from what I know about renovations, I estimate the cost to be around $250,000 to renovate both. Now, I can't figure out why there's such a wide range of estimates, and I know that the houses after renovated will be about $100,000 each, not much more than that. So what do
you
think?
Worth $100,000?
Say that again?
They're only going to be worth $100,000 after putting $150,000 into each one of them?
Yeah.
Oh, that's not a good situation. Have you thought about talking with Habitat for Humanity to see if they'll JV with you on the project? You get labor for free. You get people that know what they're doing.
I have spoken to Home Depot. They came out and they are considering the project.
Yeah.
Mhm.
All right. I would definitely get a partner in there. I mean, you just can't do that. I mean, how are you going to pay out $150,000 for a property where are you even going to get the money?
Well,
does your nonprofit have the money to spend?
The commissioners were going to write a check to have it rehabbed, but it has to, you know, someone has to actually write the, you know, write an estimate. So I can't even get anybody to write an estimate.
Will they have that person do the job?
Yes, I would have the person do the job.
Did you explain that to them?
Yes, absolutely.
Did you explain that to the person? And they still won't write you an estimate?
And they will not write me an estimate. They just give me the runaround. You know, it's busy season. That's everybody's excuse, is busy season. So they don't need the work now. They need the work in the winter when it's not busy season.
Yeah, and that's probably when it will get approved, late fall, right?
Yes, probably.
I think you got to keep, I think you need to keep dialing. What about, does the commissioner have any referrals?
Even his referrals,
I would, this is what I would do. I would get referrals. The referrals won't do it. What about the local attorneys? Referrals from them, because they've done construction loans.
Okay.
Local bankers, referrals from them. I think you just got to keep, it's a numbers game. You're going to have to keep dialing until
okay.
It doesn't look like you can go anywhere until you get this estimate done.
Right.
So you just
right.
keep working it.
Okay. And in the event that it's just way too much money and I can't get the money, should I just wholesale it to the first person who wants to buy it?
What other options do you have?
I can just walk away. I can give it
to
the
land
bank. I would use it for it. I would put more money to it and buy something in a neighborhood that I'm familiar with.
Yeah, I think that would be the that would be the next possible outcome. And then the third one is to donate it.
Okay. Thank you, Dave.
Tough problem to have. You're welcome. I hope it works out. I think it works out. We love it when people are helping the vets.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Dave.
All right. Good luck. Talk to you soon. Okay. Who's next?
Okay. Up next, we have Fran. Fran, please go ahead.
Hey, Dave. It's Fran out of Philadelphia. How you doing?
Fran, what's going on down there?
Ah, there you go.
Hi.
It's hot as hell. I could use some of that rain. My God. Like 95 degrees. Yeah, it's like the third day in a row.
It's like 65 degrees here today.
Yeah. Man, that's great. Yeah, not here. So Dave, So what I got, I've not been able to nail a deal down, but I will. Just keep kind of punching through it, you know. But I listened to callers. I had questions, but I listened to callers. Yeah, well, you know, that's what you have to do, I guess. Sometimes just kind of keep punching until something falls, and it will, right? You just kind of keep dialing the phone and calling this guy and calling that guy, and you'll get there, or I'll get there, whatever. But I found that I had similar situations to guys like Jose, not quite 55%, but when I put crunch the numbers and I put everything through the iterations of the the evaluation on the Excel sheet, I'm coming up with like 80%, 75% sometimes of the asking price. Is that what's typical? Is there a typical for a B, like a B or C type property, like like you said before, a volume property, not a value property?
If you the trick is to have a good enough relationship with a broker that he'll give you what's called price guidance. So you ask the broker if you can give me some price guidance on this. I'd appreciate it. Those brokers know how sellers like to sell. Typically they know how they overprice properties, where they would like or need to be. So that's what you're looking for. And if you get price guidance and it's higher than you can actually pay and get the return that you need, then you just got to move on.
Right.
Or put in the lower offer and then explain why you put your offers lower.
Right. So I'm doing some of those things right. Some things I got to change a little bit, but I'm also getting some when they give you the financials, right? They give you the actual financials, the P&L sheets. I see a lot of times I'm trying to fit it into your into your categories, and I see often I get times where they have things like depreciation expense, other expense, amortizations, refinance fees. Like, is that even relevant to what we're trying to do here, or is that's their fees, not necessarily our fees?
What are the other fees
other
than refinance fee?
So I mean, I got some weird ones sometimes, but I brought an example. So in this case, he's got this person has one-time charges of refinance fees, video surveillance, other rental expense, whatever that means, depreciation expense, amortization expense. Like, I don't know how to
amortization. Those aren't expenses for you. That's for the current owner. But if it has a surveillance expense, I'd be concerned about that. I'd want to know what they're surveilling. And if it's a bad area, you probably incur that expense as well. Right?
Yeah.
You want to keep that in.
Yeah.
The refinance expense, that would be crossed out. We call those things outliers, you know, things that that wouldn't either pertain to you, or months where expenses or income is just way higher or way lower than it should have been.
I got you. Okay. All right. So that's I kind of was thinking that, and I had just some notes here, and I'm gonna make those changes to a couple, you know, evaluations that I have now, and then get them out to Jermaine's, my coach, Insane Jermaine, and when one of them pops, when I get, he's a character, but. When one of these hits, right? If I get one of these and Jermaine's all in, and he says, "Yeah, this one looks good," and in the program that I bought into, I do get a sponsor, right? But that's not the same as raising the money, or not necessarily. Or I don't really know how all that works because I haven't done a deal yet. You know what I mean?
The sponsor just helps you qualify for the loan, the mortgage. They may or may not help you raise the money. It's all up to them, though. That's not part of that program.
That reinforces the partnering, like that partnering event that's coming up in a couple weeks, right? That's where you'll find maybe some
money people. Going?
I don't know. I'd like to get back up. Back up there.
If you network.
What's that?
If you network properly, you find a lot.
Yeah, I got to try to make that work out because it's a couple weeks. I just got to check back with the home boss, make sure we can get out there and be there. I'd like to go. So
be there, or your competition will be there.
I know. All right, that's what I had. I just had some little details here. I'm trying to find that one deal that works where I can write that letter of intent, and we'll see what happens.
All right. Good luck out there.
Okay.
Thanks,
Dave.
We got time for one more, but I want. Yep, you too. We got time for one more, but I wanted to. Couple of things. Scott McGregor wrote in and said, I was just reading it as Fran was talking. He says, "I know one of your hobbies is baking. Have you ever thought about making cupcakes? And rather than just frosting the tops, take them out of the paper wrappers, flip them upside down, and frost them the bottoms like they're actual cakes. People would have to eat them with a fork, but they would get a lot more of the tasty frosting with the delicious cupcakes." That is a great idea, Scott. Thank you very much for that. I love frosting. Sometimes I always have frosting at home, and I just walk by and dip two fingers into the tub, eat it up. I love it. All right, before we take the last call, I want to remind you, Ultimate Partner 9, go to daveinterview.com. You can either watch the interview with Emmett Smith that I did, who's going to be at Ultimate Partnering 9, or you can just go right to the sign-up page, but put in the promo code DEAL, D-E-A-L, and you get the pricing before we just raised the pricing for the last early bird special. So, all right, who's up?
Okay, last question comes from Tom. Tom, please go ahead.
Hi, Dave. This is Tom from San Francisco. How are you?
Tom, what's going on there in San Francisco?
Is it going pretty good.
Hey, you know Knob Hill?
No.
You know Knob Hill there in San Francisco?
Yeah,
you don't?
I do.
Knob Hill, famous.
Yeah.
I jogged down that twice. I'm in San Francisco. Yep.
Oh, wow.
Jogged that twice. Kills my calves, but I do it.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'll be there. I'll meet you in a couple of weeks, Dave, for UP9. And I was there at UP8 also.
Yeah, how was UP8? Tell everybody what it was like.
UP8 was really great. One of the main things is networking. more than anything else. And what I felt is everybody has something to gain, because if you have deals, that's a great place to go and find investors or sponsors and all those. But if you have money, that's a place where you can go and find deals where you can invest. And you can find people from all parts of real estate, apartment investing, so that you can enrich your network. So, I mean, I feel it's an event that everybody who is interested in investing should go.
Yeah, certainly get something out of it, that's for sure. It's like the event of
Absolutely.
The season.
Correct.
So what's on your mind today? Thanks for that plug. I appreciate it. What's on your mind today?
Yeah. So, Dave, I have two questions. So one is regarding Oklahoma City. What is your take on Oklahoma City?
I think it still has some legs. It's been the northwest area of Oklahoma City has been good for a while now, and it will continue for a little while longer. I like it.
Okay. So it is safe to go into that city, and we may have at least two more years to go, right?
Yeah, I would think so.
Okay.
But make sure
you're, awesome.
any city that you're going in now, just make sure all your deals are conservative, just like we teach. Make sure it has cash flow. Don't rely on value adds in order to get your equity, you know, out of the property. Just go into conservatively, and you'll do well during the correction. You probably hold it through the correction, and then still get your cash flow, and then get to know that market. And when the correction comes, you just scoop up a lot more, because you'll have your team in place, you'll have experience, you know, and you'll have a deal that's running smoothly.
Right. I mean, here in Bay Area also, we are concerned about the same thing. Like, you know, the prices are really crazy, and I do rehab single family homes here. But my next question is regarding Stockton, California. So I have a property that one of my friends foreclosed. He was the hard money lender. He foreclosed the property, but the property is vacant, and it is not in the best part of the town. I do rehabs in Stockton also, so I just want to get your guidance on what is the risk in picking up such a property at this point
in
the market. It's a smaller property.
What size is it?
I may buy it. It is 8 units.
I think you could, and you're going to rehab the whole thing?
Yeah, I need to rehab the whole thing. It has code issues and all those, so I should get a really good price on it. And I don't mind filling. I don't see any problem in filling the property and rehabbing.
Yep. I think at that size property, you have plenty of time to fix it up and get the right people in there in preparation for the correction. I wouldn't be going into. I had an opportunity to go into a very large deal in Tulsa, 200 and. Maybe 300 and something units. I can't remember exactly what it was, but it was a rehab. It was about 65% occupied. And in this particular phase of the market, I just did not want to go into a deal like that, you know, because when the market turns, it usually turns pretty quickly. And, you know, you don't want to get stuck. 'Cause nobody knows how deep the downturn will be or how deep the correction will be, but we just know it's looming on the horizon. So why add more risk? Get into nice, conservative, cash-flowing deals, you know, that gets you prepared for the correction, gets you into good deals, that gets stronger during the correction, and then it makes you stronger as an investor in a company, so when the correction comes, you just scoop up. So those are the types of deals we're focusing on. Yep.
Thank you so much, Dave.
All right, good talking to you. See you in a couple of weeks.
Sure.
All right, so if you're a mastery student, you know what your homework is. You got to get out there, and you got to get in 2 offers this week. You're also going to get yourself into 2 networking situations, because if you simply do 2 and 2, it's a success formula. You cannot help but be successful. So go out and do that. Jeannie's going to be on the call next week. It's going to be a Let's Grill Jeannie. I will be on the call again UP9 week, Ultimate Partnering 9. And I'll see a lot of you there. So, all right. Thanks, everybody. Have a great afternoon. Done.